And of course, Marshall Masters with us. We're going to talk more about Planet X. And of course, take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. It's Marshall Masters. It's your phone calls as well as we talk about Planet X. Tie the Mayan calendar into this, Marshall. What's up?
Well, the Mayan calendar for me was just, you know, right now, and I mentioned it in my video, but there's this new discussion out there, and people are starting to go, how did this thing get calculated for December 21, 2012? Because there's a growing number of people actually believe that the correct date was this year, December 16th, 2013. And what was interesting, I point out in the video, Discovery Channel came out and they said that it was definitely December 21, 2012, because they carbon dated a beam in a temple. And but they further go to say is that the date was it's a mythological date. And so I guess they carbon dated a mythological date. And we could debate 2012 as a false flag or however you want to call it, but it was a day of awareness, George, and there was no direct connection between that date and our Planet X research. It just seemed like there was this parallel interest that was tracking. But on the other hand, December 21, 2012 was good. It really gave people the wake-up call to say, hey, look. See what's happening. Become informed. Go beyond the mind-numbing and think for yourself. And so nobody can say, you know, when this pops up and it's visible and folks are going to go, I never knew, I never knew, I never had a choice, I never had an option, how am I going to fight for my life? Look, folks, I mean, that was last year. It was December 21. That was the day of decision. You're either going to decide you're going to look or you're not going to look. And so for me, I really enjoy where things have gone now because it's quieter. We don't have all the noise. And it gives us a really good time to focus in on the work, which we've been doing for this. I mean, my first article on Planet X, I think, was January 2002. So I've been at this quite some time. And this is the first time, by the way, that we're actually talking about observing the brown dwarf at the core of the system. And with any kind of orbital plot that's based on observation data, as opposed to, you know, well, gee, if it's behaving like a comet, where do we go? And on the other hand, I mean, I understand people are going to be skeptical because people expect the spectacular. That's what they really want.
Of course.
So, you know, for me, it's really, I just kind of hunkered back and I said, you know, who am I talking to in my research and what's important to me? And it's really to the people who I call the core audience. And they're principally driven by something that's affected their life, dreams, visions, premonitions, or they have seen something as I've, you know, in other shows. We've talked about my trips when I had a travel business to Russia and I was flying over the poles during the 90s. And I could see the Arctic ice melting in a slow, gradual pattern over the years. And this is back when we were still calling, you know, anyone that talked about global warming was a tree hugger that chained themselves to a redwood. And I decided just to believe my lying eyes back then. So this really comes down to a point of personal choice. And I think that's the only way to really go at it. And that's the reason why in this video I put up on my site, YOWUSA.com, I give people the exact tools that we use to evaluate the imagery to say, yes, we have it, so that they could not only say, okay, well, I'm following with what Marshall and his team is doing and what they're doing, but also that they could become independent observers on their own, that they don't have to, if you have a few $100 prosumer digital DSLR or even a HD smartphone camera and you want to apply yourself a little bit, you're not going to be dependent on anybody. You're going to be able to go out, take pictures of objects that are near to the sun and decide for yourself whether you're looking at reflections or you're looking at what I call a hot object. something that's pumping photons at the camera.
Well, you think it's a hot object, don't you?
This is absolutely. Yeah. It's a smoking hot object. As a matter of fact, there's a test. Part of what we do with this is I call it a gamma step-down test. Gamma is something that is it's a technique that was developed for desktop publishing in the digital age. It's a very new thing. You don't have gamma, you know, for old, and gamma's really in what it does. It goes in and to at the digital DNA level, if you will, to affect, you know, the overall brightness of that image. It's a very powerful setting. It's the reason why I tell everyone with this new technique, always start with gamma when you start doing the analysis, and you start backing this stuff down so that what you see is how hot is your object. And so the hotter the object is, the longer it persists, and you start with a default value of 1, go all the way to 0. When I took Jorge's image and I did that gamma test, when I got down to 0, there were only 2 objects left in the image that were hot, the sun and its smaller binary twin. And the two of them, mm-hmm. bright with these beautiful blue, you know, these bluish halo around the edges, with, and this, what amazed me, George, is that, because I have spent years looking at this imagery. I got people every day, something's in the email box. Hey, looky here, you know, I stuck my cell phone out the car window and I got this here picture, and you tell me what it is, Mr. Expert, you know. Oh, you know.
And do you tell them? Do you say it's Planet X? No.
Oh, no. Usually, if
can't,
I
can't see it with a cell phone.
You can't. Nah, cell phone is next to useless. And as a matter of fact, cell phones were, to give you guys, your listeners, an insight, historically, we started seeing cell phone sundog pictures coming out probably around 2004, 2005. And there was a lot of them back then. And it's very easy to create cell phone sundogs with these little cell phone cameras, because I'd have to get in and explain the technology. But, I mean, it's basically one step above a Kodak Instamatic. And we were just getting all of this stuff, and it was professionally planted. I know the difference between yutzes and idiots and whatever, that are just being cranks and clever. And I know the difference between them and people who do this kind of stuff day in and day out, because this is how they pay their child support, all right? And we were seeing all of this cell phone sundog stuff coming from disinformationalists. We track their patterns. They have a profile. They use a playbook. And they were inoculating the whole public so that the minute you would see these pictures, everyone would just get into this mantra of cell phone sundog, cell phone sundog, cell phone sundog, cell phone sundog. You know, you're waiting for ET to come down. Da 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 da. And I mean, this is it, but it worked. It was incredibly successful. And this whole disinformation campaign came to a screeching halt when Apple came out with its first high definition iPhone.
That was it.
That was it.
Let's take some calls here, Marshall. They're lining up here for you. Tim in Racine, Wisconsin, on the wild card line. Go ahead, Timmy.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good, Tim.
How's your guest doing?
Good.
That's good. I just have a quick question. I think I've actually seen what you're talking about. When you look, you kind of see like that rainbow color a little.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, I got another question.
No, this is a bluish. You would have to look at my video, but it's not a rainbow effect, no.
All right. Is there a possibility that this object could actually hit Earth or affect it in such a way that it could pull Earth, you know, do something to the...
Well, it does a lot of things to the planet. I don't think it's going to hit it, Marshall, but it's going to do some weird stuff, right?
Absolutely, George. You nailed it. It's not going to hit us. Anybody who tells you this thing's going to hit us is feeding you the malarkey. That's not to say we're not going to have impacts. The first thing I show in my video is the increase in the number of meteor sightings is just going exponentially off the chart. something is throwing rocks at us. And so we're going to have the impact events. Look at the Chelyabinsk meteor that hit Russia. The biggest thing to hit Russia, or the entire world, if you will, in over a century, and it completely blindsided NASA, and they said the reason why is it came out of the sun. And they don't have anything pointed in that direction, and which I thought was a better explanation than pray. But we don't have to worry about it hitting us. What I'm concerned, caller, is that it's going to, when it goes from its point of perihelion, closest point to the sun, that's where it's going to start hitting back out into the deep space. And when it does that, it's going to be passing back down from the northern skies into the southern skies, but it'll be on our side of the sun. We'll be seeing it off and off to our right. And the concern that I have is, as this is coming through, the gravitational forces would get a lithosphere lock on our planet and literally just swivel the skin of our planet around and following it. So what I am saying is that this thing is going to, it's not going to hit us, but it will trigger a pole shift event on par with what Edgar Cayce was talking about, which is not the planet flipping head over heels or stopping and moving again, but more of a few degrees in shift that is still going to be substantial. It'll cause the oceans to come out of the basin. And so it's not going to hit us, but boy, it's going to hurt us. It'll leave a mark.
Okay, we go now to TJ, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, TJ. You with us?
Hello? Yeah, you there?
Yep, go ahead, TJ.
Yeah, I had a question. These events are going to happen. Could this be something that was described in Revelation, like how this third of the earth would be scorched with fire, and John said that he saw a new heaven and an earth coming out of the sky?
Well, I think it's very close to Revelation when they talk about wormwood and things like that, don't you, Marshall?
Yes. As a matter of fact, depending on which version of the Bible you're using, the translation, but the ancient Egyptians and the ancient Hebrews called this object the Destroyer. And if you're, depending on which Bible you're reading, the newer ones tend to be more accurate, and they go to the root on the words. They really dig down and go into the history on it. But I think that there's a lot more information about Planet X that is in the Bible than people would imagine. It's so much so that it strikes me as, you know, sometimes I just feel like the one purpose of the Bible was to encode this information so that it would be revealed now. And, you know, we publish a little book called Planet X and the Colburn Bible Connection. Greg Jenner wrote this years ago. And he went through the Bible and he compares Bible verses with other folklore, ancient wisdom texts. And when you look at it, you really realize that the Bible talks about Planet X a lot more than we give it credit for.
Well, that's true. You just got to read through it. You got to sift through the parables, don't you?
That's right. You got to sift through the parables, but it's also, you got to get to the etymology of the word. You got to, you know, you got to go take those words right back to their digital DNA. What did they originally mean? So the problem that we have with finding the information is you have to get through the interpretation layers.
So you don't think we're going to have, you know, massive earthquakes and things like that, just the big volcanoes?
No, it's going to be everything. We're going to have earthquakes. We're going to have, just in the one thing, when it comes around to our side of the sun, which would be in a few years, first off, the sun is going to be enraged with all of it. You know, it depends on how you interpret Revelation. But even in the Bible, it really seems to indicate that we are going to get a roasting, a real heck of a roasting. And I did a lot of study on Christian eschatology with a gentleman by the name of Robert Ryland, wrote a book, Jesus in the Third Temple. I was surprised. I mean, I'm a secular guy myself. I believe in God, but I just belong to the Church of Marshall, one on the rolls, and we don't do interfaith. But still the same, once I got into Christian eschatology, it's very, 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 very powerful. There's a lot of knowledge that's in there that's obfuscated, but it really does connect. And what it's telling us, that the stars are going to shift in the sky. We have this from other ancient folklore. So we're going to have a pole shift. In fact, it is my firm conviction that Noah, the flood of Noah, was a pole shift event, because in the Colburn Bible, there is the story of Susudah and Hanok. It's very similar, talks about the same boat, 300 cubits, but it goes into much more detail. This was written by the ancient Egyptians. And when you start looking at where the ark is placed in the story of Susudah and Hanok and how things are done, the only way they could have known where to place the ark in those circumstances, it had to be extraterrestrial intervention. It had to be somebody with the ability to map and model our planet from space. The only way they would have known, because the ark in the story of Susudah and Hanok was placed at the neck of a long canyon that opened out to the sea, and it was put in a place so that when the ocean started coming out of their basin and you have these monster waves rolling in, that by the time the wave reached to the back of this long, long, long canyon, when it reached the ark, instead of going over the ark and tearing it apart like hydraulic sandpaper, it had been so expended that it just simply came from underneath the ark, lifted it up, and then took it back out to sea. And, you know, something like that, it's just inconceivable that someone would, I just know exactly where to put this thing, all right? No. And actually, in the story of Susudah and Hanok, mysterious strangers come to a king and tell him this is going to happen. And the king then hires this man to build the ark for him. And selects a small army of artisans, craftsmen, and so forth. And they take animals. There's two stories between the Old Testament version and the Colburn Bible. A lot of similarities, just a lot more detail on the Egyptian account. So we have this history, George. It's been passed down to us, and it's been passed down to us in allegory. So we have to sift through, knowing what we know today, and to go back and really reread it. But there's a powerful, powerful lot of knowledge there. Jenner did it. He had a little tiny book. It's a one-day read. I call it a my cup of tea read. You know, after that, you decide whether you want to continue exploring the topic or not. But when you see what Jenner did in that book, it just will take your breath away. It'll really be a huge impact for you.
All right, Marshall, we're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you in just a moment and also get some more of your predictions about Planet X when we come right back. By the way, follow us, those of you who are not, on Facebook and Twitter by simply going to coasttocoastam.com and just click those icons up there in the far right-hand corner. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, we've got more special things for you planned on Coast to Coast AM, so make sure you're part of it. And we will be back in a moment with Marshall Masters as we wrap up Planet X. Okay, on the for sure meter, Marshall, how sure are you that this is all going to come down?
100%.
Wow. And in terms of tragedy, something happening just as high?
We're talking about major dieback events. We're not talking about the end of humanity. We're talking about the end of life as we know it. But it's already happening. It's just, right now, we're at the sniffle before the sneeze stage, but this is going to happen. We've observed the objects. We're closing with them. They are already perturbing the sun, which explains this anomalous behavior that we're seeing right now. I mean, the sun is just, Yeah, I mean, the experts can't predict what's happening. It defies predictions. And so this pattern is only going to continue to increase. And like I said, we're looking at something that could take as long as 10 years overall. But it's eventually going to close with us as it passes through our side of the system. And when it does that, then we would have a full shift event, which is going to shift the planet a few degrees. And that would cause the oceans to come out of the basins, kind of like water sloshing out of a pail. And everything just is going to come because you have all this solar activity. So that energy's got to go somewhere. If you remember that movie, 2012, they were talking about weird neutrinos, something that was energizing the core of the planet. Well, same thing. I think, more realistic is what's happening. But the core of our planet, it's like a tea kettle. Turn up the heat, it's going to blow steam. So we're going to have the volcanism. We're going to have seismicity. We're going to have a full shift event. These things are going to be coming, and people are going to know that these things are going to come in the coming few years, and because the trends are just going to continue getting worse and getting worse. We can really try our best to ignore it, but I mean, after the weird weather we've had this summer with these massive heat waves on one hand and other areas that are reporting record low temperatures.
No, it's bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, it's the question, George, is not when is it going to happen. The question is when are we going to actually start looking at what's really happening?
Back to the calls we go. Gerard, Ohio. Raj is with us. Raj, thanks for calling.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, Raj. Thank
you. Hey, thank you for doing what you do. I appreciate it.
You are welcome.
I guess my question for Marshall is, having the right tool would really help out. That'd be like infrared. Marshall, do you work with or communicate with the group of astronomers called the 00 Skyview team, and aren't they working getting their hands on something that in the infrared range?
Skyview, we don't work directly with them. They're a very anonymous kind of a group. They've referenced us in some of their videos, and we've referenced them. We like their work, and they have their own infrared equipment. They have had this thing under observation for some time, and I really like those guys. Yeah, so. One day I'd like to sit down with them and have a beer. Yeah.
What would the headline say one day, Marshall, if the mainstream decides to pick up on this?
Oh my God.
Just like that?
Just like that.
Oh boy.
We're toast. That's it. Poodoo time, baby. The guacamole is hitting the fan. First off, what we're going to see is an awful lot of trusted sources, institutions that are going to be moonwalking backwards to explain why, they didn't see this stuff coming.
Exactly.
Or didn't talk about it. So we're going to see all of this hand-wringing and trying to give themselves a pass. But, it's really going to come down to the people that are going to take a look at it and take action. And the ones that are going to remain in denial to the absolute last point. I call it the bliss of ignorance. When you come to this topic, something somehow, somewhere, someday rips the blinders off your head. You don't see the world the same way ever again. And the experience is about as warm and cuddly as getting slapped in the face with a dead salmon. And what you realize in that moment is that your bliss of ignorance is gone. You don't have that bliss anymore, and that's very unsettling. Well, now that the December 21, 2012 non-event, I guess if we want to call it that, with the Mayan calendar happened, or the dating of it, is people are going to be clinging to the bliss of their ignorance like jealous lovers as never before.
This is going to be interesting times.
Oh, boy. Your lips to God's ears.
Aaron is with us in Henrico, Virginia. Hi, Aaron. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
I'm
Thanks.
Really glad to hear this topic. I haven't listened for a while, so thank you.
Sure thing.
I my head is just spinning with information right now, and I have to apologize that I'm not sure that all of it came from the show tonight, because I've been researching so much on some certain things. Most of all, every day, constantly, Comet Ison. And then also these Louisiana sinkholes, and going all the way back to the Chicago fires with the lady's towel tipped over the lantern, supposedly.
Mm.
But there are a lot of connections that this kind of, it's all kind of connected, that this was like a meteor shower that caused these fires, or a broken up comet. Now, this Comet Ison, it's, if you really look into it, it's a lot bigger than what they're saying. It's supposed to be half the size of Jupiter, by calculations that aren't really being broadcast. And like you said just a second ago, the mainstream media, which, I mean, this show is Fox Radio, I believe. I mean, so this is mainstream media, but nobody's going to broadcast this because it's too scary to people who want to live in that, like, just complete oblivion, bliss.
Sure.
Non,
it petrifies them. They're scared to death of this.
Yeah, there's that. There's that. You know, Aaron, you're a seeker of truth, and you're trying to sort all of this stuff out. And you actually, you're the kind of folks that I like to write to, and to help and to get information to, because you're out there, you're doing it, you're beating the bushes, you're looking for answers. And Aaron, as frustrating as things might get for you from time to time, stick with it. One day it'll click, you'll have a beat on things that's going to resonate with you, and it's going to give you a lot of internal strength to do what you need to do and move forward.
The flood during the Noah's era, the, you know, Noah's flood, do you think that was caused by this planet?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's what the Colburn Bible says that. Okay. Read the Old Testament. I believe in the Old Testament it says the stars, you know, went crazy, you know, moved around in the sky. But, I mean, definitely the Colburn Bible, this is the ancient Egyptian accounts that were written down in the years following the Exodus. And they said it was actually responsible for Noah's flood, the sinking of Atlantis, and the 10 plagues of Exodus, which was this last flyby event. So this thing routinely comes through, and the severity of the effects on us literally depends on the three rules of prime real estate: location, location, location. Where are we in relationship to it and the sun when it starts heading back south down through the ecliptic and back out to the far out to the edge of our system? And if we're on the same sun side of the sun as it during that phase of its orbit, well, we're just in deep kimchi. That's all.
Let's go to Frank in Janesville, Wisconsin. Thanks for holding, Frank. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Nice to talk to you again.
You too, Frank.
I used to have a statement to make. I happen to be a man of faith.
Okay.
And as far as I'm concerned, we're going to be getting to going to our heavenly home sooner than thought.
I don't know.
Remember
if that's
that
a good
Jesus
thing.
Told us, O ye of little faith. You know, what can we do about it in the first place? We cannot change.
Can't stop it.
The planet.
No.
Somebody else may change it. That's beyond our power, totally.
Well, what can you do about this, Marshall? Let's talk about that for a moment, because part of the other part of your book, Planet X Forecast, is an 2012 survival guide. How can you survive this?
There are ways to survive it. If you're going to fight for your life, and that's what I'm really about, is survival. For example, solar storms are going to be bad. Well, in Planet X Forecast, we have a good section on how to build a home radiation shelter for solar storms using commonly available materials and a wide different selection of materials. Strategies for surviving on the move, strategies for surviving in place. In my other book, Crossing the Cusp, Surviving the Edgar Cayce Pole Shift, I talk about what the pole shift event will be like and who's going to survive that. And, you know, the caller is talking about a matter of faith and a matter of what is in your soul. And in Crossing the Cusp, I explain why the meek do inherit the earth, which is going to surprise a lot of people. They think that rich elites who are building these deep bunkers 2 miles down and they've got all these unlimited resources, nothing ever goes according to plan. They're not going to do that much better than the folks that are going to be on the surface. But what's going to pull us through is, who are you? What's your? Are you going to be in it for the species? You know, are you going to join with like-minded others? And are you going to give your all into a community? And in that sharing experience and planning and preparation, there's a lot of personal evolution that goes. If you get out of the denial mode and you get into the action mode, actually what happens is as you move along with that, you really do feel a sense of that there's a much greater, there's a bigger unseen hand at play. And that you, whatever you're going to do, you're going to feel that sense of mission within you. If you came to this life to be one of the many that are going to die in the initial events, then you're going to do that, or to survive it but not see it to the backside, which is what I call when we see blue skies again. But then those that make it to the backside, the thing is that everybody is going to play a crucial role. It doesn't matter if they make it to the backside or they die along the way, because this is going to be a massive consciousness uplifting experience that is really going to propel our entire species. We're right at, and I think, you know, earlier, George, you mentioned the Hopi, and and I dearly respect the Hopi. I grew up in Arizona, and I just like them as a people. But one of the things in the Hopi prophecy rock says we're at a junction point. If we keep going the way we're going to go, we're going to wind up being a slave species for countless generations to go until finally, you know, we wind up with this barren rock of a nothing exploited planet and we wither away and die. We become fossil record. Or we go, hold on a second, let's take that path of enlightenment. Let's go in the direction that our creator wants us to go. Our creator's throwing this monkey wrench at us and saying, okay, if you can turn this lemon into lemonade, man, you are going to see some impressive things. So I come at it with a sense of hope, and I come at it with a strong belief in God. But on the other hand, for me, the message of the universe is first, last, and always survival. You were given this fabulous life to live. Fight for it. Fight for it. That's the message.
Let's go to Josue, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. First-time caller. Hi there.
Hi, how are you? This is Josue Solak. I was going to tell you that in the Bible, one of the disciples asked Jesus, I'm Jewish, but one of the disciples asked Jesus, when would we know this is going to happen? And Jesus describes it like the blue catena, as basically the sun will stop shining, and all the stars will fall from the sky, and all the bodies in the Jewish in the Hebrew Bible, it says that all the systems of the sky, which is the bodies of the universe, will cease to work as they usually work. And not only that, but I had dreams since I was a little kid that has told me that I'm going to go to Moldova, one of the caverns in Moldova, and 38 people will go there with me, and that's how we will survive this catastrophe. I know you just mentioned about that if people that are below the earth and you have resources, they're not going to survive as much as they want. I mean, they're going to survive. They're not going to do any better than the ones up on top on the surface. But I believe that there's certain ways and places that you can't do that, because even when Jesus was telling that same story, he also mentioned that most of the people will run for the mountains, and most of the people believing on top of the roof. And, you know, there will be a lot of fear. And pray that you're not pregnant, and pray that it doesn't happen in winter.
Well, the fear is going to be enormous. I think it's going to boost religion, Marshall, don't you?
Oh, yeah. You know, what the ancient Egyptians tell us is that what we are going to see is going to scare us so bad, George, that men are going to be impotent and women are going to become infertile. Stop and think about this. What could be so powerful as to turn off a teenager's horny switch? Okay? If you got teenagers that are not thinking about sex anymore because they're so scared, it's got to be real scary. This is going to scare a lot of people. It is really going to, but.
But and you say around 2015, though. I want to get these dates for people.
Yeah, from 2015 on is when things really start to percolate. That's what I'm estimating based on our orbital path analysis.
Marshall, let's give out your website, if you would, and your books and your DVDs are still available for people fascinated by this. Spell your website for us.
The website is Your Own World USA. It's YOWUSA.com. And our YouTube channel is Yow Books, YOWBOOKS. And the books that you would want to take a look at are Planet X Forecast and then also Crossing the Cusp. These are survival guides that are going to help you. And then the Colburn Bible, and if you want to look at the history of all of this.
Very good. Marshall, thanks so much. We're going to keep monitoring this. 2015 is not that long away at all. At all. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, John B. Wells, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.